Today's episode of the In the Money Players podcast brought to you by In the Money Plus. Reminder, we've got a ton of extra Breeders' Cup content coming up. If you want to get it, sign up now. You'll get the rest of Keeneland. You'll get Breeders' Cup. And hey, you'll get a little bit extra on to November as well. Going to be hearing from Sean Borman later in the show. He's going to be part of this coverage. Nick Tamaro, JK, myself. It's going to be a lot of great material. It was very popular last year, and it's going to be so again this year. To learn more, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. $15 gets you a month. $150 gets you a whole year of In the Money Plus. Comes with little digests of the picks on the late week shows and also a bunch of extra content, both audio and written. Check it out, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Monday, October 18th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you. The Wi-Fi is actually working today. I'm probably jinxing myself saying this, but the Wi-Fi is actually working right now at the Hyatt in downtown Lexington that I absolutely trashed on one of the Sunday podcasts I did yesterday because I had to scramble out to Keeneland to record a couple of shows. Anyway, it all worked out. We got the shows up. We gave out plenty of winners. And now we're back to look back at this weekend and look ahead to some exciting stuff happening now in this week in Lexington specifically. We'll tell you about that a little bit later. Right now, though, I want to bring in the man. I used to describe him as the usual co-host of this program. That hasn't been as true in the last few months, but hopefully we're going to be hearing and hopefully seeing a bit more from this gentleman. He hails from the planet Texas. We like to call him the People's Champion. These days, maybe we should call him Mr. Exacta. He's Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
Dang. At least I'm a likable guy that keeps getting second place in big contests.
Second in the big Keeneland contest on Saturday. Sounds like you might be going into some of the particulars of that with Spencer Lugenbuehl a little bit later this week on Red Board Rewind. But right now I just wanted to ask you to reflect, especially your decision in the last race. You went there up 700. You can tell folks what you did from there. And my key question is, would you do it again differently if you had the opportunity?
No, I mean, look, it's one of those situations where, like, even before it, when I was, you know, texting and talking with people, it's like, I couldn't control it. The important thing to note is that I had a $700 lead. There's two things I think that are important about the end game of this contest. First, you and I discussed this, is that the prize structure in Jim's contest, Jim Goodman at Keeneland, and they're very top heavy in terms. I mean, I'm sorry, not very top heavy. They're very flat in terms of like prizes. Through 11, you got an NHC seat, which a lot of people obviously want to get, especially this time of the year. It's important for people. And then also there was like 7 BCBC seats. So there wasn't going to be a bunch of people gunning to the top to try to beat. You're not going to risk 7-8 grand to hopefully try to catch me. Or catch first and win the 40, and then all. So it's you're not going to have a bunch of people flying at you late. That was one thing that I kind of knew. The second important part of the decision was that I had a minimum left of $400 that I had to bet. So I was going to have to wager 400 anyway. So I just made the decision to bet $1 less than the lead I had on the person who was in second. Assuming that they didn't have to bet, they could have just stayed. I was going to have to bet anyways. I might as well maximize my wagering dollar. And essentially, I just double win bet the winner, ultimately, and the four. And I did it with kind of Dutch principles where I was going to get basically the same thing back. So I had a lesser bet on the one. So I hit a $250 win bet on the one who won, which actually did move the goalpost on the people that were behind, which is something I like to do. I like to move the goalpost. If I can, because they're targeting for whatever 13,000, and then I ended up moving my total to 13.8. Well, if someone was doing really good math and trying to get to 13,000, I could have still kind of held them. The horse wins, but Don Chung hit and ended up clearing me by like $800-900. I ended up getting second, which is fine. BCBC, my second NHC seat, because I rolled my Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seat from last year to this year because I didn't. I wasn't really able. I mean, I could have went to the NHC last year, but I didn't really want to, and I wanted to work the Travers instead. So that was the end game there, PTF.
And in terms of thinking about ways of doing it again, would you have done anything differently?
Well, I mean, hindsight's 2020, and I think you can always, it's always important to look at, is to review your process. But I like what I did. You know, I guess maybe one thing that could be said that I wish I would have done differently in the entire contest is my early plays weren't like, you know, my most proud moments. In the first to get a minimum out of the way, I bet Tom Amos's horse to place, which I thought was a little bit more gangster than betting the show. In hindsight, maybe I should just bet the horse to win. The horse galloped, so I would have had a little bit more money to hit a little bit more, to have a little, you know. Yeah, there's that. But outside of that, I didn't really do anything dumb. I didn't have any strong opinions early. My goal was to try to advance my bankroll as much as I could in the safest way possible to get to a situation where I could play the double that I ultimately played for $1,500 that kind of got me where I got, which was Shantisara into Ducal, so or Ducale, whatever call the horse's name.
I like Ducale.
I was alive. I ran second for like another $3,200. I ran second, and so, you know, like I said, it's all about the process, not really the result.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean? What do you mean you ran second for $3,200? I'm not following that.
Yeah, so I ran second in an earlier race prior to my hitting that big double.
Gotcha.
I ran second in like the fourth or fifth to win $3,200. So if I would have hit that and then done everything else the same way that I did it, I mean, obviously someone could have tried to target me at 18 or 20,000, but I would have been significantly higher and I'd have been significantly harder to catch. But
the one thing I thought of was to take that same 600 or 700 you bet in the last race, and I'm not sure this is right or not, but look at a pool like the Exacta that might have had a chance to move you up instead of 800 to move you up 2,000 or something to like more significantly move the goalpost. I agree. The number one thing you don't want to do there is to bet yourself out of first. I still, one of the great moments in Pick 3 Boy history when they bet themselves out of the top spot in the BCBC all those years ago. I feel like that's something that you really don't want to do. And to be fair to them, like at least in the BCBC, which is so top heavy, I can make the argument if you think it's going to be a wide open last race that's going to, you know, has the chance to really turn things on their ear, I think you can make an intellectual argument to bet yourself out of the top spot. Whereas in the flat prize structure, I think it would be a major, major mistake. But that was just the one thought I had. Maybe instead of the incremental move of the double win bet, if you were to go back and take a look at the exact. Now, if it was me pushing the buttons, I didn't come up with the horse that ran second. I know Sean Borman liked the thing. I would have lost it all. But I did want to at least mention that as something to consider in that possibility. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but curious for your thoughts.
First of all, I guess not even to almost compliment the big Pick 3 boys, but like if you have an opinion in the end, I don't have a problem with betting yourself, you know, betting yourself out. If you have an opinion, because the chances are they're gunning for your total. They're going to try to, someone's probably going to pass you. We've talked about that forever in these contests. The person leading in the BCBC hardly ever wins leading in the last race hardly ever wins.
No, that's
There's
fair.
Way too many people behind you that have way too much money. So if you want to fire away and you have an opinion, cool. Just to do it, which is my second point, is you mentioned why not take a look at some like the Exacta pool. Because the reason is because for me, you have to have an exact opinion.
That's right.
I just didn't. In that race, I thought one of two things was going to happen. I thought that Wesley was going to get loose with Chili Patin. I thought that horse was going to get loose. The horse came back and ran well off a layoff on soft ground back in April. So I wasn't concerned about a little bit of a firmer ground layoff. For this type of horse who's got that much early speed against a race that didn't have any speed, that horse is going to get loose and win, and Wesley is going to beat me when I don't need him or win when I, you know, he's the most opposite person for me ever. I can't get him right. And then the horse on the rail for Vicky Oliver, who you know, I had mentioned to Sean that morning, who's got the best LP in the race, and he told me it was that horse, you know, to be, you know, contradictory to my initial opinion that Chili Patin was going to wire. If that wasn't the case, then give me the best closer. And that's how I ended up on the 1-4. That's who I was alive to in pick fours, pick fives, and pick sixes. So, like, it's all I needed was those two. Not pick sixes, five of six and pick sixes. But that's – so I only needed those two. But I didn't feel like it was an opinion where they had to run 1-2. I just felt like it was an opinion that one of them was going to win. So in that position, already having the lead and having to bet the $40 anyways, I wanted to just kind of – move the needle a little bit, and that's in you know why. And also, like, the worst case scenario there, in my opinion, was I get third, I get a BCBC, another NHC, and 10,000 in prize money. So, the worst case scenario I just didn't want to miss that exacta, you know.
Yeah, I totally makes sense. I mean, key it as closely to your opinion as possible. That's the name of the game. I want to really illustrate for people what we talk about when we talk about flat prize structures and top heavy. Those are the opposing things. So run down what the top three were in the BCBC. Everybody gets BCBC and NHC in the top three. And then what was the cash for first, second, and third?
Well, yeah, and just to be clear, it's top seven got BCBC, which has a $10,000 value.
Yes.
The first place was $40,000. Second place was $20,000. Third place was $10,000 in prize money.
Yeah, so really, you're talking about a $20,000 difference between first and second place. Not nothing, but now tell us the difference, and I apologize if this comes off as me rubbing salt in your wounds here, JK, but what was the difference between what Marshall won last year at Keeneland for the BCBC and what you walked away with in terms of prize money?
I think it was $210,000 was second place, and I think first place was, I don't know, like $380,000.
More than $150,000, though. I mean, just, you know, an order of magnitude bigger difference. And then that just goes down the line and then the key point, which you already alluded to, is at least the top seven in the Keeneland contest, they're getting BCBC. When you look at how the cash is structured, it's just wildly different. In the top-heavy prize structures, there's every reason to fire for the top, really.
To your point, it's more about the seats than it is the prize money when it comes to that. The reason I felt the way I did towards the end, it's October. It's a month away from the Breeders' Cup. So getting in the top seven is basically everyone out of the top 11's goal.
Yep.
Just in the top seven. No, so when they're looking at their $1,400 bankroll, everyone behind me was not saying, oh, I need to get to 13,000 to win this thing. They were saying, I need to get to 6,000 so I can get seven.
Yeah, I agree.
And so that's where people were shooting. And then even more people, and even a lot of people were saying, it's October, I've got 3 months left, I just need to get to 3,800 so I can get 11th and get my NHC seat and be done with it.
I think that makes perfect sense. And,
so,
and, you know,
I didn't feel like I had a lot of people that were gunning for my, you know, whatever. I had $13,050 going into the last race.
No, I know people I was sitting at the table, they said 10,000. If we can get our bankroll to 10,000, we're going to get a Breeders' Cup betting challenge seat. So that's what they designed their plays to do. And that to me is a smart way to play it. And in terms of the effective difference of the 10,000 of the flat prize structure versus the top heavy, I mean, to me, for your rank and file horse player, the flat structure is great because you have a much better chance to get to that without, you know, making multiple all-in moves and being super aggressive. You can play a little bit more normally and try to catch once or twice and get there, whereas as we've seen in the more top-heavy contests, you've got to be willing to risk a lot more, and that's great, that's cool, but that's not everybody's playing personality, and I like the fact that there are contests that address both. I mean, to me, it's totally cool. I'm not criticizing the BCBC in the least. I think it makes a ton of sense to have that prize and those top couple of prizes be outsized and to, you know, increase the amount people are going to be turning over their money on our biggest 2 days of races. But I think on, you know, a very good, just, you know, a Saturday at Keeneland, we're talking about good racing, but I like the idea that you can not have as much of like your biggest day out there and still get an incredible reward. I think it's one of the reasons why Jim Goodman's Keeneland contests are so popular.
Yeah, I mean, I do. Look, I think a lot of people like to play in that contest because it is a – I think a lot of people would think of it as a great opportunity to win a NHC seat. Wow, this is the first time – we've long said it, right? It's like the online contest to qualify for the NHC are awful. And they're just bad. And it's like you – you know, the 1 in 65, the way the structure is, it costs $10,000 online, it costs $6,000 if you go through the contest world, like live contest world. It just makes no sense to play online. It's just a bad expectation. But if, and I say online, I mean like through like the whatever the NHC qualifier. Now if you but the you know, a tournament like Keeneland or Pick Your Prize or the Breeders' Cup, even Betting Challenge. Those are great opportunities for players because there's an opportunity for you to actually make real money. There's an opportunity for, and there's a lot of, and the seat values are significantly lower. So I think that's why people have always played in Jim's contest. He always gives a lot of NHC seats. Also, the tradition, Jim's contests are one of the longest running, if not the longest running outside of, you know, the really big ones. The first grade one gamble, you probably know better than I do when that was, but. And then Jim also took care of the players, you know, before Nate Newby came along and really understood how to treat tournament players and Brian Skirka, it was, you know, there was Jim Goodman who was doing it. And so I think, and it became a tradition. Like our friend Dan Kovaleski, I'm hoping you ran into, you know, he's kind of stepped away from the game to a certain extent, and he still goes to the Keeneland contests. And so I think that that part is part of the reason why Jim's contests are so popular. But, yeah, it's a great opportunity to snag a seat.
I did not see Dan Kovaleski there. Hopefully he wasn't. I just missed him. But to your point about the accommodations, yeah, we were up in the Phoenix room. There was tons of room. It was like a Woodbine, you know, in the conversation with Woodbine of best racetrack buffet they had up there. It was really it was a great day, and I recommend people – if you're a tournament player, think about Keeneland Spring. Think about Keeneland Fall. You're going to want to get there and experience one of the majors. And yeah, we had a fun weekend. What about the racing itself? I tell you what, JK, this Haughty, one of the horses that was in your mix yesterday, would look pretty good. I haven't seen the figure yet. I don't know if you have, but my suspicion is she'd look pretty good in a race like the Juvenile Filly Turf that will surely be oversubscribed and excluded from that, right?
You know, she won so impressively, you know, yeah, you're probably right. She probably won't get in. I think they'll try to get her in. She is a nice horse. And the funny thing about her, this is a great story, if you haven't seen it, of why to not play the Musical Jockeys game if you don't know the stories, is I think Haughty was dismissed on debut because she had Junior Alvarado. She was like 8-1 that day. And I think most people like me even said, this horse can't be very good. Why the hell would Chad ride Junior? He never rides Junior. If it's not Irad, it's not Jose, it's not Johnny, it's not Manny, it's not Joel. I mean, there's Louie, there's Tyler Gatt. There's literally like 9 people in front of Junior. So how bad is this horse if Junior ended up on the horse? And the answer to the question is that Joel and Ron Anderson were riding a horse for Christoph in that race. He gave the call to Haughty, Joel and Ron, and then took off of Haughty to ride Christoph. To ride Christoph. So at the draw, Chad is basically like, doesn't have any of his normal riders, and Joel spun him. That's how he ended up with Junior. Junior wins on the horse. Junior gets disqualified, which is frustrating because it has to be frustrating for Chad. At least Chad explained it to me. He was frustrated because if he would have won that race, stays up, and then he runs in a stake, and the horse probably gallops like she did yesterday, and now he's in the Breeders' Cup, and he's second, third choice in the Breeders' Cup. Now he's probably not going to get in.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky.
I texted Chad yesterday, it's a bleeping shame, and he said, agreed.
Back to that draw for a second. I'm sure Chad and Ron Anderson exchanged some words after that, and they probably weren't, hey, Ron, have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Chad wasn't happy about it, you know. But you know, but I'm sure that Ron's been spun by Chad, and Ron wasn't happy about it. I think it's a my prediction is it's a working relationship in which you're gonna piss off your working partner a few times, but it comes in circles and it just happens. You know, I'm sure Joel has spun Kristoff for Irad. I mean, excuse me, for Chad. So it, you know, I think it's just part of it. I think it's part of being a jockey's agent is trying to manage that relationship.
Oh, no doubt about it. I was just clowning around. Chad, not one to seem to suffer stuff like that, particularly, you know, happily. Let's just put it that way. But yeah,
kind of October he's having, by the way.
Oh my God, it's been nuts. I mean, it just you
I
know,
think it's nine graded stakes, maybe.
You know, and
it's not
and
nine, it's eight.
And how many has it been the 1-2 finish in? I mean, I was very mad at myself for missing out on Shantasar. I don't know how I screwed that one up, but it was a decent day. It was an absolute grade one day socializing for me out there, and managed to make a couple of bucks. Though I did get shut out multiple times chatting with people at that great little bourbon bar down there by the paddock. What's that?
Well, so the answer is three grade ones exactas for Chad in October, and I wanted to ask you what kind of bourbons you were enjoying.
Oh my! We're going to need a longer show. I mean, we were there all day. I would say the absolute highlight for me was the Thomas Handy Sazerac Rye. That was my absolute favorite. Saturday was more of a rye day. I went through, and they had like the E.H. Taylor Rye. We got into that. We got into the Van Winkle rye, which is one of my favorite of the Van Winkle products, and I took pictures so I could remember it all. But it was a very, very pleasing day out there on Saturday, to be sure. Did you have any other thoughts on any of the other racing or anything else to share? I know you have limited time today, so I'm not going to keep you more than a couple more minutes.
Yeah, Shantasar was good. I thought she ran really well. She's an interesting prospect. I'm sure we won't see her back quickly, but I think she's an interesting prospect moving forward. I'm trying to think who else was there. No, I didn't really. I'm sure there's something else. I just can't remember what it was.
I mean, there was some good stuff up in Canada, obviously the Sands Point at Belmont, but it does seem like the focus at this point is going to be largely on Breeders' Cup and that stuff moving forward. I know we're psyched to have you part of the Breeders' Cup coverage on the plus side, but also we'll be doing plenty of stuff on the free airwaves. Now, I think you're going to be traveling when I'm recording the Monster Pods. Is there any way, and it's okay if the answer is no, but is there any way we can maybe get you to chime in on a race on Friday and a race on Saturday, steal 15 minutes of your vacation? Are we drawing live for that, or is it a no-show?
Yeah, what day would I record?
Probably the day after the pre-entries, I think. So what would that be, like next Wednesday? Production meeting.
Yeah,
we're going old school here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna probably be on somebody's beach, but you know what I'm saying? Whatever we have to do.
That would be, if I can steal you for 15 minutes, we will. We got to have you on the Monster Pods. And then obviously, week of, we're going to be working for the Breeders' Cup content team. We'll do all our picks there. We'll get you maybe writing up a bet on the plus side, get you in those grid picks. And then we'll have you too for our show we're going to do with Medallion TaylorMade. That's going to be Wednesday of Breeders' Cup week, even if we have to get you in pre-recorded for that.
I think I'm doing, just in case people want to check it out, I think I'm doing expert picks on TwinSpires for the two Breeders' Cup days.
Oh, that's fun. That's really fun. Good stuff, JK. We're going to have you as a big part of our Breeders' Cup coverage, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon. I say it's time to move on, unless you have a closing thought, and then we'll move on to our next guest. What do you got for us?
Nope, I don't got anything. Love, guys.
In that case, on to our next guest. PTF back with you. I have moved locations to the area that I've been calling Sean Borman's lair, because every super villain needs a lair. Sitting right across from him, the rare in-person interview on the In the Money Players podcast. Sean, how are things?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about Breeders' Cup. It's been well publicized on these airwaves that these days you've shifted your tack a little bit, looking at Hong Kong more than U.S. racing, but it feels like the Breeders' Cup is one of those opportunities you feel like you can't ignore on these shores.
So you certainly can't ignore it. That's all you guys talk about on the airwaves. So.
That's fair.
Figure if I have to listen to you and JK go on and on and on about it, I might as well make some bets.
You've had a pretty good history in the VC overall, would you say?
Yeah, I've had a pretty good Breeders' Cup history, I would think, yeah.
Any particular race or races that have leapt to the fore?
I really like Shared Account back in the day when she won. Paid, I don't know, $100 or so. I did totally mess up the try in that race, and that's sort of sort of brutal. But if I remember right, I had a win bet in the exacta. And then I think the race right after that was the Distaff that year. And, you know, I was playing with Mike back then, and we both just killed that race. I mean, I think we had, if I remember right, that was the year that the Pletcher horse warmed up bad.
Yes.
And still ran. And
Life at 10 life or at something. 10,
yeah, I think that's right. And we had the race narrowed down to like six horses. And when she warmed up bad, you know, all of a sudden we've got a default super high five sitting there. And we both did really well in that race, if I remember correctly. So some Mott horse won. That was a very good Breeders' Cup year.
Was it a Royal Delta year, perhaps?
That sounds right. Yeah.
The memory it starts to be where it gets a little shaky.
That was a lot farther back than it seems like it should be. That was probably 10 or 11 years ago now, right?
Yeah, it was a minute ago, no doubt about it. But year in, year out, this is an event that you prepare for and are prepared to take swings.
Absolutely.
Well, you're going to be part of our In the Money Plus coverage, which I'm excited about. And one of the things I want you to help focus on there is the European invaders, because over the years, obviously, I've considered that an area of specialty, my own work, but also, leaning on guys like Stephen Bonnick and, of course, Rob Dove, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today. But your approach is a little bit different, a little bit more numerical, and without asking you to give away the store, I'm curious what you're comfortable sharing about what you do in terms of converting figures for the European runners who are going to be running in North America at the Breeders' Cup and elsewhere throughout the year.
Sure. Well, I think first we need to give a huge hat tip to Rob Dove, because this was a lot of his work went into this as well. But he was kind enough to share a time form to buyer conversion with us. And really based on the results from last year, I think we need to bump him up to top five. it was just really good. He shared that conversion, and then I sort of took it a step farther and then converted some time form sectional upgrades into my own sort of buyer figure and late pace figure for the European horses.
That sounds like the Simon Rowland's
correct
work.
Yes.
And if folks are interested, I mean, Simon's great. He's been on the airwaves. He has a whole ebook about that process you can probably still find these days. He's, I think he still might do some stuff with time form officially, but he's with me over at theraces.com, and he's obviously another just an absolutely brilliant guy who I've had the pleasure of getting to know. But in terms of, my sales pitch, as it were, for the plus stuff, Dove is going to be involved. You're going to be involved. And we're going to do the work so you don't have to if you sign up for that. So that should be a lot of fun. What about specific thoughts on this year's Breeders' Cup? I've been on record saying I think that a lot of the dirt races especially look like they have favorites who are going to be pretty tough to beat. Through some other alliances, we'll say, that I have over in the UK and Ireland, I've taken some positions already. Curious to get your quick thoughts on some of these big favorites heading in. To pick one that you want to talk about, or I can throw one out to you. You tell me.
I would agree that there's going to be a lot. There probably more than usual. There'll be a lot of heavy favorites, particularly on dirt. Some may or may not be vulnerable. Some are vulnerable. I think the most likely winner of the weekend is still Nixco. His last figure, I believe, in the commercial stuff came back slow. Mine did not come back slow, but it is a figure that I question a little bit. Of all the horses, he runs complete races more than everybody else. And in particular, his race two back at Saratoga was you know, hit the best race of his life, and it was fast, early, middle, late, final. It was just a dominant performance. And if he runs back to that race, or even his race, to me, even his race at Churchill, they can't beat him. You know, I know there's questions about sometimes he shows up, sometimes he doesn't. But I think that's fairly clear that in two-turn races, he just shows up, at least for Brad. And I don't see him getting beat, really, and will be pretty heavily invested in that outcome.
I was more of that mind until it appeared that Medina Spirit was a horse again. You know, I was not impressed by the Medina Spirit comebacker, but I did think that race last time for Medina Spirit showed. I don't think he's fast enough to win, but I think he might be fast enough to give Nick's Go a tussle on the front end. Now, I know your pace figures are probably going to say that Nick's Go is going to clear him, but I mean, we've seen this horse, even when he's off form, putting up an unusual amount of fight. I was thinking he'll go as long as he can, as fast as he can, and that race might set up for, I mean, it seems like the most obvious one it then might set up for would be Nick's Go's stablemate. But I'm curious if you think Medina Spirit, not even asking if he can win, can he be a pace factor? Does he lessen Nick's Go's chances at all, in your view?
You know, I think any other serious pace factor lessens his chances just by the very dynamics of racing. I don't think he's good enough for long enough. I mean, I'm looking at my pace figures right now, and he's got two races where he could really, really put the screws to Nick's Go, but that's only until the half mile call. And then his pace figures drop off, and his late pace figures tell me that he's, you know, in that battle, he'll be first to quit. Does that mean Nick's Go can't get run down? No. But back to, you know, figures and whatnot, I have a central quality. I have his last race dreadfully slow. You know, just looking at his career in totality, on my stuff, he's just not good enough to beat Nick's Go. Especially with Nick's Go being five lengths in front of him, probably turning for home. Doesn't mean it can't happen. And if the price is right, you know, maybe I would bet it that way, but I don't think the price will be right on that horse. I feel like he's going to be sort of overbet given his...
He could be favored.
Well, if he's favored, they're making a huge mistake, in my opinion.
That's how the pollsters have had him ranked over essential quality. And the markets, people are actually betting money. I think it's 7-2, Nick's Go 9-2, essential quality, the last I saw.
That's interesting. Yeah. I have one race in my stuff that would even make him competitive with Nick's Go, and he hasn't run back to it. To me, he's a really good 3-year-old, but he's not gun runner. He's not arrogant who's going to come in here and run a 110 or 112 buyer figure and win this race. I know some of his published figures may say that, but my stuff says no. So.
How about some of these other big favorites? I know you've been a noted critic of Jackie's Warrior along the way. He's one of the ones I've backed already. And some of these things I'm backing, it's just math. They're horses I know are in my heart are going to be shorter on the day. So I'm taking significantly bigger prices. Has Jackie's Warrior won you over at all?
No. Jackie's Warrior to me is still, I hesitate to use the word phony, but I'm going to use the word phony because I know, and I can't even 100% explain why this is, but I just know from seeing it year after year after year that fast horses, and fast meaning they run fast final times and look, quote, brilliant in some of these races, that don't finish fast are phony horses. And eventually they'll come up against somebody that can hook them on the turn and put them away. And the problem with the sprint this year is I just don't think there's that horse. So he's the most likely winner, and he's going to be talked about in the, you know, in terms of some great sprinter, but he's not. Now, horses change. Maybe he comes out in the Breeders' Cup, wins by 10, and runs 110 late pace figure, and I'm just totally wrong. But as of right now, you know, after, you know, we talked about him the other day privately, and I went back and looked at my stuff, and his career sort of average late pace figure for me is about an 80, which is, you know, any claiming horse in the country. Well, not any, but good claimers run in the 80s, and allowance horses run higher than that. And so I looked at his last few races where it seems like he's gotten a little bit better, and it's still, you know, he's averaging in an 80. He topped out at an 89. That's just not good enough. You know, when I look back at the history of the sprint, except for last year, which was sort of a similar type of race where there just wasn't a great sprinter figure-wise, you know, he's not Matoli. He's not Roy H. You know, those horses could get to the turn quickly and finish fast. He can get to the turn quickly and finish slow. So he's very vulnerable, in my opinion. I just don't know who can beat him, and I don't yet know how to bet that race.
Well, we've got time. The good news is you are going to be back for the Pro Punters Roundtable. In addition, we will be doing some paywalled stuff with Sean, but Sean and hopefully Paul Matisse, if we can get schedules arranged, we will be doing two Pro Player Roundtables sponsored by our friends at Millridge, who are also sponsoring the rest of my stay here in Lexington now that I'm away from the dodgy hotel Wi-Fi at the Hyatt. Hopefully the Millridge Wi-Fi is a little better. But I love the way you talk about these races and envisioning where in the race a horse is going to make moves, et cetera. To me, one of the really interesting questions regarding that are in both juvenile races, actually, where you have these top juveniles coming from one-turn races at Belmont going to two-turn races out at Del Mar. Speaking, of course, about Echo, Zulu, and Jack Christopher. Mm-hmm. Very curious to see if in your numbers, first of all, just in general, do you see any clues in the way that you create a pace line of a horse that's going to do well going from one turn to two turn, just in general? Do you feel like you have any edge in that area, or are you guessing like the rest of us?
I rely more on trainers for that than I do pace lines and figures and breeding to some extent. But, you know, I'm getting to the point now where I used to think maybe 40% of the game was trying to figure out breeding and trainer intent and, you know, sort of narrative-y stats like that versus figures. And now I'm closer to where it's almost 90-10 figures. Like, show me the fast horses. Show me they can finish races. And I'll bet them really at any distance on any surface, especially on any surface. You know, one of the things I quickly learned when Keeneland went to Polytrack was good horses are going to run on any surface. There was a lot of talk back then about, well, he's Polytrack bred, or he's a turf bred, so he should do better on Polytrack. And then I didn't see any evidence of that. I just saw, you know, the pace of those races sort of lent themselves to more turfy type horses because they were run like turf races. But I don't think it was a breeding thing. I just think good horses can run on a lot of surfaces. And the same thing for distance. I think good horses can run multiple distances effectively given a pace scenario in today's race that suits them. They can get the distance most of the time. So, you know, those horses going, you know, Echo Zulu's an Asmussen, Jack Christopher's Chad Brown. I'm not worried about those guys going from one turn to two turn. They're both fast horses. They can run fast early. They can finish a race is good enough for two-year-olds. That doesn't concern me at all.
I'm hoping our pals at Black Type Thoroughbreds can give Echo Zulu a scare with Hidden Connection. How does she look on your stuff?
I think they can give her a scare. I'm probably going to bet Hidden Connection. One, because I love Ballas. Two, because I love her last race. She's, you know, the thing that worries me about her is the idea of trying to go up and hook Hidden Connection and sort of put it to her. I think she'd be better served to let some of the California speed hook Echo Zulu. I think she would be better served by letting some of these California horses that have run some pace figures go up and try to deal with Echo Zulu and sit behind, you know, be in that first flight behind the pace, because she has the best finish of these horses on my stuff. And she did it while sort of pressing the lead. But I think she's a horse that can take dirt, and I think she can finish races. So she's probably going to be the horse I bet to win in that race. And then come back with an Echo Zulu on top of her exact situation.
I like it. Getting some good early thoughts there. In the juvenile, are there any that strike you as the major threat to Jack Christopher at this point? I'm thinking, and part of the logic in going ahead and taking the 5-2, Jack Christopher, I think he could be even money in the race. I mean, especially with that last figure getting upgraded to 102. I mean, it seems like a situation similar to, potentially similar to last year with all the money that Jackie's Warrior caught, despite the question marks, just because his figures were so much faster than the rest. I think this is the same thing, deja vu all over again. And I'll tell you what, I mean, if the horse is going to be even money and I've got 5-2, he may win, he may not win, but I'm going to feel pretty good about that bet regardless.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like that bet you made. But I think you're right. I think he will be even money and maybe even shorter than that. I don't think this is a great field. The one horse I was a little interested in was Command Performance.
Oh, sure.
Not sure if he's quite good enough yet, but that would be the one alternative for me right now. I haven't completely dug into that field just yet, but that's the one that I'm looking at.
He's my exacta partner for sure, and I think he's a pretty pleasing price. Something tells me he might be the one you want more down the line than on the first Saturday in November. But we'll see how that shakes out. Is it Saturday or Friday that race is? Anyway, never mind. I'm not going to edit it anyway. Life is good. Where do you stand on Life is Good? Are you among those anointing him a major horse, or does he show any question marks looking at your stuff?
No, I think he's very good. Showed a new dimension last time of not going quite as fast early, but finishing off fast.
Now, see, that's very interesting to hear, because a lot of people are saying, what happened to his final time figure? Because it did, I don't know if it did on your stuff, but commercially, it declined. Is that the same?
It did decline, but only by 1 point on my stuff. So that doesn't concern me at all. And that goes back to me. I don't have Jackie's Warrior running 140 buyers like some of these people do either. So he did decline, but his overall pace line early was way down. But he did what a good horse should do. His late pace number went way up. So to me, he just showed a new dimension, even though he was still on the lead like usual. He's another one, I think, that could rate and finish. He's going to the mile, correct?
Correct. Dirt mile.
Right. He should, to me, he's probably going to be the favorite and should be.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a lot of beating. If they beat him, it's going to be a hell of an effort.
I'm super, super interested in him as well. All right. One more horse I'm going to ask you about on this show. Obviously, like we said, we're going to have you back. Heck, maybe we'll even get you do a race on the Monster Pod with us next week as well. Get you doing like triple duty over here, if not quadruple. But Gamin, I'm very curious if your figures reflect the decline that you see in the buyer figures. Just doesn't seem like she's as fast this year. I have the seemingly contradictory opinions that A, she will be the shortest price of any of the favorites we've discussed so far on the show, but also that B, I think she's vulnerable. I want to take her on.
I agree. She's not nearly as fast this year as she was. And I think when Paul and I were on sometime in the summer or Derby or something, we discussed her briefly and it
Saratoga probably.
Maybe, no Lasix has seemed to slow her down quite a bit. She's not nearly as brilliant as she was. She's probably a little vulnerable for sure. She will be bet lower than her true ability, her true current ability, I think. So anytime that happens, you need to be looking for alternatives. I don't think there's a ton of great alternatives. I don't trust Bella Sophia, at all. So I don't know exactly what I'm going to do in that race yet. Is Bella Sophia, right?
Yes, Bella Sophia, you nailed it. I was thinking, if nothing else, though, she's going to have enough pace to make Gamin miserable. And, she seemed like the kind of that scenario you described before that could take her on the turn and just keep going to me. But you're obviously seeing some vulnerabilities in your proprietary information.
She could. I just, Rudy Rodriguez shipping West for the first time. Well, maybe not the first ever time, but, first time for a Breeders' Cup race. She has one race on my stuff that tells me she could take on Gamin and maybe come out ahead of that battle. But that's just one race, and the rest of them are just not close.
Is that the last race?
No, it's not
the last race. That's
the race two back.
Gotcha.
In the test.
Gotcha. That was a nice race.
That was a nice race. She was in the good part of the track that day and got a really good trip, too. So I don't trust her, and I think, you know, at probably second choice odds, that's not the one I want to try to beat Kameen with. Because I just don't – I think both of those horses are probably going to be overbet. So you're going to have to find something else to do that. I just don't know who that is yet.
I wonder, how about a runner like CeCe? Does she have any races where she can finish enough, especially if those two hook up? I don't know. You know, obviously being the president of the Michael McCarthy fan club might come into play here. I did win the election over JK to be the president of the Michael McCarthy fan club.
I'm sure that was a tight election.
Almost like mayor of the Paddock Bar back in the day.
I think being president of the Baffert fan club probably hurt him in the polls. It's been a rough year, you know, for that particular fan club. So that, you know, not to get into like Nate Silver polling that territory, but I think that probably let you eke out that victory.
I was pleased. Whatever, yeah. But as long as I get the job done, I'm not too concerned. But
back to the horse. You know, CeCe, she's really good, and I love McCarthy. I think he's a tremendous trainer. I'm not sure she's good enough to do what you just asked. I want to find a horse in there that has legitimate sort of graded stakes quality late pace figures. And I don't know if that horse exists.
Well,
typically when that horse doesn't exist in these good fields, the races are sort of merry-go-round type races. And Gamine probably wins.
It's going to be fascinating to see. And we'll, you know, obviously these are just the earliest days conversations, a lot more to come. You can get more from Sean through the Plus service. We got another minute here. What else you want to talk about?
Where's Clarier going? Is she going sprint or route?
I would have to think she's got to go distaff with that pedigree. She's distance. She's distance all the way.
To me, she would be interesting to turn it back to seven and could win that race. But I think you're right. I think she'll go.
That's an interesting idea, though.
I really like her last race for a distaff alternative to Latruska. I think she's extremely alive.
I feel guilty. We should have talked about Latruska. I'm glad you brought it up while we have another minute here. Speaking of horses who are going to be really big favorites, do you think she's a legit favorite at a very short price?
I do think she's a legitimate favorite. She's very fast. I can't really poke any holes in her, so I think she's legitimate. I'll lean on her to some extent, but like I just said, I'm very interested in Clarier, so I'll have Clarier as a winner on horizontal tickets and as an exacta partner and things like that.
What is it about Clarier that makes you think she can reverse form with Malathon?
I just really liked her last race. She, you know, to me, she moved up on the turn, finished extremely well, and that. And continue, you know, she started moving earlier in the race than like a plotter would.
Right.
She started her move pretty early and sustained it and finished very nice. And she just, you know, that race just smells to me like she just improved. And we've all sort of just been waiting for her to become a great horse like everybody thought she was going to be. And I think she may have just done it.
Interesting.
So that, you know, her odds versus Malathon's odds. Malathon's another one that very, very good horse. I've had pretty good luck betting on her this year, and I think I really understand her as a horse, but I also am pretty sure she might be a little overbet.
Also, didn't the mile and a quarter help her maybe more than it helped some of the others?
I think it probably did, yeah. But again, back to the distance thing, like, you know, I don't know. Her figures for me going farther are not necessarily that much faster if they are faster than her 9 furlong figure.
Well, that's so interesting. But I think it might be the case where it hurts others more than it hurts her.
Sure. Yeah, maybe the others' figures just fall off going that far and she sustains her run. That's exactly right. Good stuff. Maybe.
So much fun, Sean. All right, this Uber's about to arrive. Appreciate this time in the lair. Looking forward to watching some Hong Kong with you Wednesday. And I can't decide if I want to do the Horse Player Happy Hour Final from here or maybe live from Keeneland. I actually did a whole TV shift from there yesterday, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Anyway, we'll decide. Your schedule will determine what we eventually do, but really appreciate your help, not just on this podcast, but all week, giving me an alternative to the Brooklyn Bunker, which isn't easy.
My pleasure, and good talking to you.
Cheers, my friend.
Next up on the show, very happy to be joined by one of our regular guests and our founding partners at that. Around here, we call her the first lady of the In the Money Players Podcast. It's Kim Weir. Kim, how are things?
Hey there, Pete. Happy Monday. It's a big week, and I'm happy to be with you.
It is a big week, and let's just start right there. The annual horse show, a horse show like no other, happening Thursday night. I'm going to be hosting an event right here in Lexington, Kentucky, over at Mirror Twin around 6:30. A small suggested donation, but you'll make up most of that, because if you show up and tell me you came because of hearing about this on the podcast, I'll buy you beer. So you're in really good shape as far as that goes. Mirror Twin, the location, approximately 6:30. But of course, this is a horse show. You don't have to be in Lexington. You don't have to be at your viewing party at Walt and Whitman Brewery in Saratoga. You can watch this anywhere in the world you are. Let's take a step back, though. We've talked about the horse show a bunch on these airwaves. I was happy to be a part of it last year. Explain to folks what it is and why you're doing it.
Well, thank you, Pete. Yeah, it was so much fun doing that with you last year when we were all locked in our houses and we made the most of it. And this year, it's way more fun because you can be hanging with your crew in Lexington watching with our friends in Saratoga. I was just at the sales here this afternoon, and everybody at the sales was like, all right, I'll be at Walt Whitman on Thursday. We're watching the show. It's kind of like I said to Jason at America's Pastime Stables, I said, so Jason, it's like this. It's like you're going to a bar to watch a football game, but instead you're watching a horse show in a prison.
See, it's just like it, other than that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. So anyway, I'm like, and just enjoy being able to tell your friends and family that you're going to the bar to watch the prison horse show. It's just going to make people stop and wonder. And that, my friend, is exactly why we're doing it. Because this program that you are so good at speaking of, and that I love talking about, the TRF Second Chances Program, has been happening for a very long time. It's been happening in New York for 40 years. It's been at the Wallkill Correctional Facility. It's been happening in Blackburn for 20 years. It's also been happening in Ocala for 20 years. And so while that's wonderful, this show on Thursday is a celebration. It's a celebration of all that has led to today. It's been all the people, all the gifts, all the donations, all the hard work, all the articles written, all the interviews done that enabled a program like the TRF Second Chances Program to come into existence and to stay in existence for so long. That is what we're celebrating on Thursday. And we're specifically celebrating the program in Ocala, Florida, which is at the Lowell Correctional Institution. And that program is unique, as they all are, but it's specifically unique because it is our only women's prison program. So 20 years ago, some very visionary people in the Ocala thoroughbred industry made this happen. We were celebrating them. We're celebrating the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association that has done the lion's share of fundraising for this program for 20 years. And what we're really doing, getting to the crux of it, is we're giving our audience, wherever they may be, with any connected device on this planet Earth, they can go into the prison. And what I've been saying is they will get to see it, they will get to hear it, and best of all, they will get to feel it, which means feel the impact of these horses on these individuals and the way in which their lives have been changed. And that's what you'll get to tune in and do on Thursday night, from the comfort of your home, from the fun of a bar, or even in an airplane. You could tune in and watch this thing. This is what I was saying to you beforehand, Pete. Like, what is that? I don't know what ad that was, which is the I guarantee you will feel better about the world because you tuned in and watched this thing on Thursday. Like, 100% money back guarantee, you will feel better because that's what is happening.
Let's go over some key points. The best way to watch, where can people go?
The best way to watch is actually just go to our website, trfinc.org. You know it well. You can go to your page, but you just go to our page. There's a pop-up and it leads you straight to where you need to be. It is broadcast on YouTube. It'll be also on our Facebook, but all you really need to do is go to our website and you will find it there. There's no tickets. There's no RSVP. To be clear, this is not a fundraiser in its own right. It is meant to open hearts and open minds to what our horses can do. So any internet device will get you there. And it does start at 8 p.m. So in the spirit of important details, pre-games can start as early as they like. But the kickoff is at 8 o'clock, using our football analogy. And the whole show will be about 45 minutes long, with some live conversation with me and Lonnie Powell, who's the CEO of the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. We're sort of your co-hosts. We're going to play the Pete and Kim role from last year. And then we jump into it. And this 20-minute piece, which captures the program, is honestly, I don't want to scare anybody off by saying it's a work of art. It is going in Acacia Courtney's IMDb record, because she produced it, she directed it, and she elicited the most extraordinary words from these women. It is all that. It is awesome. So shout out to our In the Money media spokeswoman, Acacia, who I just saw 10 seconds ago at the sales. And then we finish. We have a little bit of commentary at the end with some really interesting folks. I'm super honored that Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie, who's a multi-generational Ocala guy, will be joining us to share his feedback on what he's seen, as well as Niall Brennan, who's a tremendous industry influencer in the two-year-old world. And he has actually hired several of the women from this program. So he'll be joining us to share his thoughts too. That's what's happening, and I am so excited about it.
Love it. It sounds great. I'm excited to be hosting my bit in Lexington. You say it's not a fundraiser, but of course, you know, while we're having this conversation, I can't help but sneak in there the link we always look for people to donate around these parts, trfinc.org/players. Still have an opportunity to get some of that In the Money whiskey with an appropriate donation. Maybe this is the right time to do that, thinking ahead to holiday gifts and whatnot. trfinc.org/players for a lot more information. Of course, this is just one prong of the work you're doing over there at the TRF. I know you wanted to celebrate a really cool achievement that we've been talking about on the show. Another one of our friends and colleagues in the extended In the Money media family, Bill Duncliffe, did his fundraiser last weekend, and it sounds like he was a little sore, but largely well-planned and successful walking version of the Boston Marathon to raise money for the horses. How did things turn out for Bill? How did we do?
Oh my gosh. Well, Bill is truly a hero for the horses. He took that page right out of your book, Pete, and he had a good day. I think his biggest concern was what the weather was going to do, and I do not think it rained on him. He kept us updated throughout the day on Saturday, and he had a very successful walk, both physically and feeling very satisfied with his achievement, and the horses were very, very happy with his results. He indeed raised $5,000 thanks to his family and friends celebrating his 65th birthday. And that will take care of two of our Happy Herd members for a whole year in their life with the TRF. So he has really made an impact. And I hope that he might inspire another listener in the money world to think of some other milestone that might be sneaking up on the horizon, because the horses are a great way to celebrate. In fact, we'd recently had another example, and I don't know if Bill was the inspiration or not, but we had a friend, well, an individual reached out to me and said, "Hey, I've got friends getting married. They are total Saratoga fans. They love racing. They love the town. They want to do something cool, but I want to do something they would never expect, which is I want to raise money for the TRF and have that be their gift." You know, I laughingly told you, I hope that they didn't need dishes or something, but nonetheless, this lovely couple raised about $1,500 from a bunch of friends, and that was their wedding gift to their friends. So, you know, creativity is always welcome. You know, Mr. Fornital, you are the king of creativity in my world. So I know your listeners are out there thinking of their own clever ideas, and the horses just say thank you through me as vehemently and enthusiastically as I can. And Bill, we're just thinking of you, and we're so proud of what you did on Saturday. You are awesome, man.
It was great, and we can't wait to have him back on soon and do some more collaborations with him. A couple more notes before we let you go. Talk about creative ways of raising money for aftercare. This is the final week of Horse Player Happy Hour. We're going to have another qualifier on Thursday. Once again, this is one of the $189 qualifiers. One in 65 will win their way to the $10,000 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. But what really matters about this to me is the fact that, once again, the entire house cut of that $189 is going to go to the TAA and the TRF. I really want to try to get two full seats. I want to get 130 entries for this thing. We encourage people to play because, you know, when you think about the donation piece of this going to the TRF, then all of a sudden it becomes not a free roll, but basically when you bake in the donation, it's a chance to play for the seat for cost, essentially, if you're willing to give that money to the aftercare charities, which I know a lot of people out there are. So we encourage folks to check that out, horseplayers.com. And it's going to be, once again, I think we're going to do four from Belmont, four from Keeneland. We'll do the whole contest as part of the live stream. And also going on while this is happening, we've got our 10 final players at this final table, and one of them is going to win their $10,000 BCBC seat. I want to hear from all 10 of them, hopefully, during the broadcast. It's going to be a Horse Player Happy Hour unlike any other, and you can participate and raise money at the same time. We want to see you there. Horseplayers.com is the place to go to sign up for that one. And then I had a listener question, and I wanted to get your take on this, Kim. This was somebody saying that they respected aftercare, of course, and we're happy to do their part and help. And we're also wanting to lean on industry types and industry organizations to do more, and suggesting perhaps that more of the onus on providing money for aftercare should come from industry organizations. And I want to hear how you answer this question, but my answer to it essentially is that, yeah, probably there's a lot of industry organizations and players that could do more, but this is an issue so essential that if you love racing, if you care about this game at all, it's on everybody. And yeah, I mean, should most of the onus be on players? No, but everybody involved with the game on any level, I'm okay with asking for help on this. And I also think that a rising tide lifts all ships. And I think when industry organizations see players supporting the TRF through various fundraising initiatives, it sends a message that we care and underlines how important it is for them to get involved too. But what do you say to that issue that, you know, more of this should come from endemic industry organizations than from players?
Well, I think your answer is great. And it is indeed my viewpoint too, that it's each and every single one of us, whether that be me as a individual or me as an entity, we all need to look and say, how much does this matter to me? How important is this? In this case, the welfare of the horses, whatever you, however you define the this. How much does this matter to me? And am I doing what I can commensurate to how much it matters to me? So then everyone does their part in the way at the level that they should, which does sort of turn into this 360 degree solution, which is that we all do what we can at the level that it matters to us. Now, industry players are bigger and it probably matters more to them because it's certainly the future of the sport is whether we take care of our equine athletes. So I could also agree that the large entities should probably percentage-wise do a bigger portion, and they are doing a lot. But I also love your piece there, Pete, which is that when we vote with our dollars, our vote counts more because we can say, a horse player can say to a bet maker, I'm doing it, what are you doing? And you have a lot more leverage when you say you're putting your money where your mouth is if you're asking someone else to do that. So it's a rising tide raises all ships, but it's also like the wheel spins itself, that if we each do what we can, that inspires the next person to do what they can. And I just think the horses are counting on us. It is this one piece of their welfare and their care that they cannot do anything for themselves about it. And so it is incumbent on each of us to do what we can, and everyone should do what they can at the level they are comfortable. And I so love how you inspire people to do that, Pete. So, and I thank your listener for asking those good questions, because no one should be off the hook. If you love the game, if you love any piece of it, you have to do something for these animals because they're counting on us.
That's the best place to leave it, Kim. We look forward to seeing you on Thursday night. Thank you for your time today and look forward to having you back maybe as soon as next week to hear about how it all went from your perspective, if you're good with that.
I would love it. I'm always happy to be here, Pete, and I'm so excited that you'll be with our friends in Lexington. Have a great time. And, you know, one last thing, I do like leaving it where we did, but I can't, because next time I talk to you, you will have done something we've been working on for years. You will have seen a Second Chances program with your own eyes. So we'll leave the listeners eager to hear all about that when we talk next.
Very excited about the trip out there tomorrow, and that'll definitely be a great thing to pick up with tomorrow. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank today's guests, starting with JK, Sean Borman, Kim Weir. Great to get to catch up with all of them. We'll thank our founding partners, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and 10 Strike Racing. Around here, we always like to root for the purple and black. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!